9 o'clock. It's good to have you. We'll continue our study of survey of the book of Proverbs. Everybody have material? There's material in the rack. Robin, you see that they'll get a copy of the material. Who needs it? Robin? Hold up your hand if you need a copy of the material. Proverbs. We've already been studying in this book, as you probably already know. I've talked to you about the book, what it's about. The keynote is wisdom. We spend a lot of time talking about the value of wisdom. I've talked to you about the foolish and being fools and being wise. You fill all that stuff out? Okay. I want to start talking to you today about the ant. In Proverbs 6. 6 and verse 6 beginning. Proverbs 6, 6. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. What's a sluggard? Lazy person. Consider her ways and be wise. The Bible often talks to us about considering different things. That's a good topic, consider. The ant, having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. Right there on the right. Down low. Right in front of you. How long will thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou rise out of thy sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man. You ever watch an ant? You ever take time to see a little ant work? Anybody? You ever do that? You know, we often talk about busy as a bee. Ants are busier than bees. You know that? They are an unusual little creature. And he says that to help us appreciate. Here's a little ant that can do so much. And what he's really after in this story is about being lazy. Do you ever see a lazy ant? I don't know how you'd recognize one, but I guess the fact that they're busy indicates that they're not lazy. And so that's some good stuff in about the ant. They provide for their own. They lay up for the harvest. They lay up at harvest time for the time they need the food. And a lot of people need to learn that. A lot of young people need to be taught about work and how to provide for their own. In fact, the Bible says if you don't provide for your own, you're worse than what? An unbeliever, an infidel. How could you be worse than an infidel? Well, infidels do what? They provide for their own. And so he's kind of a slam at people who don't do that kind of thing. That brings us down to point 5, the training of children. I've suggested to you that one of the finest manuals for child training is the book of Proverbs. And I've listed some passages for you to look at and to read. The first one is chapter 13 and verse 24. He that spareth his rod does what? Hates his son. But he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. You know, sometimes you hear parents say, well, I just love my child too much to correct him. It's the opposite. He said, if you don't, you don't love him. And it's important that parents learn that. When do you think a child needs a discipline, needs to start with a child? Andy? At home? About what age you think? You already started it?
Oh, yeah.
How old is your boy?
14 months.
You already started it? That too young to start it?
I think so.
And?
Oh, no.
No. Nope. Debbie, what about you with yours?
Yeah, right. As soon as they're born.
They won.
You have to start training them.
Yeah.
Teaching them.
You know, most people don't think that. They think you wait till they're about, how old maybe? 8 or 10. Eight, and here you tell about 15. Here you start. There's no use starting to correct a 15-year-old if you haven't done it in the past. Why not, Robin?
They're already set in their ways.
Yeah, they're already set. Yeah. And they're not going to pay attention to you. They'll tell you where to go. At that age, oh yeah, they sure will. And so, if those of you that have young children need to learn that. And, okay. The second one is 19:18. I'm in the book of Proverbs, 19:18. Chasten thy son while there's hope. Let not thy soul spare for his crying. That tells you something. Why there's hope. That indicates there comes a time in which there is no hope. At what age, I don't know exactly always, but it gets to be a period that the correction doesn't work if you haven't done it all along. So you can't take a 15, 16-year-old girl, for example, and start teaching her how to dress. She'll laugh at you if you didn't do it while she's little, right? And so all those kinds of things need to be started while children are young, okay? While there's hope. Is he going to cry when you correct him? Your boy cry when you correct him? He will. Why does he do that? Why does a kid cry when he gets corrected? Thank you, huh? No. He thinks you're going to, he thinks you'll stop. Yeah. And let not thy soul spare for his crying. Sure, he's going to cry. And parents get that, maybe I've about half killed him already. And so I'll quit. That's what this text is about. Let not thy soul spare, that is, spare the correction, for his crying. Sure, he's going to cry. That's normal. But don't let that stop you from correcting him. That's what the text is saying. And a lot of parents get all excited. Well, he's crying. He must be hurt. He not hurt. He knows. They're smart little dudes, aren't they? Tammy? Are they smart little guys? Yeah, they really are. And lots of times these kids outsmart the parents. Do you know that? They know how to work them. And that's what these passages are about. The next one is 22:6. We're in the book of Proverbs. 22:6. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. I've told you earlier that the word train carries the idea of teach them, set a good example, that is, show them how to do it. And what's the next one? See that they do it. Now, a lot of parents just holler at kids all the time. If you don't quit that, I'm going to whip you. If you don't quit that, I'm going to whip you. If you don't quit that, I'm going to whip you. And never do anything about it. That kid soon learns that. Do you know that? And he knows that, well, they're not going to whip me. Because they've said that before and then do it. Or what your daddy gets home. The daddy gets home and he's tired and hungry and busy. And so he doesn't get any correction. So training, that means to teach him, show him how, and then see that he does it. Yes, Alan?
Johnny, just like Caitlin Bimby and Tiara on the way over here. It's all about God, you know. They always like to listen to church songs. They can care less about any other song. It's in how you raise them. Always put God first.
Good.
You know, it's just, every kid's going to have problems, but it's better off to do it on the right way.
Yeah.
To go about it.
Parents need to know that kids are going to be kids. You can't expect a kid to act like a grandfather or grandmother. They're just not going to do that. But at the same time, they need to have some discipline. The next one is in 22:15. Did you read all these? Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. How do you get rid of that foolishness out of a child? Correction. Correcting him. And there are different ways to correct people, of course, as perhaps you are well aware of. And one of the things we would look at was that idea of foolishness, and there's that word again. Okay, in 23:13, do you get that one? Withhold not correction from the child, For if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Not going to kill him. Now, he may scream bloody murder. He may scream so loud you think he's already dead, almost. He knows if he does that long and loud enough, you're going to quit correcting him. And so he just, he's learned that. And this admonition is, don't let that keep you from correcting the child. Okay? Next one is 29:15. 29:15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. A lot of kids are just left to themselves. A lot of children are just left to root for themselves. And there's that word wisdom again. The rod and reproof give wisdom. Makes him wise. A lot of children are just left to do what they want to do, when they want to do it. And he says, the wise man says, that'll bring shame to his mother. You just mark that down. That's the way it works out. 29:17. Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. A lot of parents go to bed at night with a sad heart because the unrest their children give them. And probably it's their own fault in some ways, and that they didn't correct him when he should have been corrected. You ever think about if I had my life to live over? What would you do different if you had your life to live over in regards to your children? Well, you'll have to decide that. I expect all of us would make some changes, right? We'd do something a little differently. At the time, we thought we was doing the best we knew how, right? And that may not always be the best. We're human, and children have a mind of their own, as you well know, and they're going to do things that they like to do when they like to do it. And so it's pretty important that we learn that, okay? Anything you want to ask or say about those particular things? The best manual that you're going to read on child discipline is the book of Proverbs. The New Testament deals with it somewhat as well, like Ephesians 6:4, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Okay? Okay, the next thing we're going to look at is, this book talks about, it's a comparative book. I mentioned that to you when I talked to you about at the introduction. Better things. The book of Proverbs is a contrast of one thing that's better than something else. Did you get a hold of that? I've listed 18 of them for you. Did you get all those filled out? If you did, then you've read some good material from the Bible about things that are better. Let's look at some of them. The first one. Chapter 3 and verse 14. For the merchandise of it. What does the word it refer to?
Wisdom.
Right, wisdom. You have to remember now, and I pointed this out to you when I gave you the introduction last time we studied, that sometimes he talks about wisdom, and by the way, wisdom is the ability to apply knowledge that you have, make an application of it. So the merchandise of wisdom, that's what he's saying, is better than the merchandise of silver and the gain thereof than the fine gold. Isn't that something? 8:11, the second one. Wisdom is better than what? What's the comparison there? Just look on your paper if you filled it out.
Rubies.
Yeah. Wisdom is better than rubies. If somebody were to lay before you a box of fine rubies, and in the other box there's a wisdom, which would you take? Which would you take? Well, don't answer that loud. Just think about that. The majority of people would be tempted to do what? Take the rubies. But the Bible says that wisdom is better than that. Okay, the next one, 15:16. Better is little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith. A lot of people have a lot of trouble. In fact, a lot of people have so much trouble they can't hardly function. Do you know that? They have trouble with their kids, they have trouble with at work, they have trouble with their neighbors, they have trouble at church, they have trouble at school, and everywhere you look there's trouble. Problems. And they get you down sometimes. They can, can't they? But he said, better is little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith. Trouble. Troubled hearts. It's hard to sleep at night like that, isn't it, even with this trouble. Maybe there's sickness. There are tragedies that happen to families. And all that creates trouble. A troubled heart. A troubled mind. And so, but he said, better is little with the fear of the Lord than that. That's 15:16. Next verse, 17. Better is a dinner of herbs. What's herbs? What is that? And what's herbs?
Excuse me?
Could be. What's herbs?
A plant or something.
Maybe some plant that produces something that people take. Herbs. Where was herbs used in the Old Testament? With what festival? Was it the Passover? Had bitter herbs? Remember? Yeah. Herbs. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a stalled ox and hatred therewith. Well, he's talking about eating something. Herbs as compared to eating an ox that's already in the barn. He's already stalled. He's ready to be killed. Meat's just around the corner. But no love at that table. He said, you better just eat the herbs than the fatted calf, so to speak. A lot of people's homes are lacking in love. And he said, he's comparing that in this text. 15:17. The next one, 16:8. You got all these filled out? I assume you have, right? 16:8. Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues without right. What statements are these? These are comparative statements. 16:8. Next one, 16:16. How much better it is to get wisdom than what? Gold. And to get understanding rather than to be chosen than silver. See, he's comparing those two things. See, this book's about wisdom. And Solomon continues to talk to us about getting wisdom. 19. Better it is to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. The Bible places a lot of emphasis on being humble. He said it's better to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide even the spoils. What's the spoil? What's the word spoil mean? What? Huh?
Food.
Food? Well, it could be. Might not be. Often.
Plunder from war.
What?
It's like the plunder that they take, like after they.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you'd rob a house, what you take would be the spoil. Huh?
It's an attitude about things.
Well, I don't know about that. The spoil is something you take. Like in the Old Testament, remember Achan? Took of the spoil of the people, took of their goods. That's what that was about. Okay? 16:32 now. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty. Are you slow to anger, or do you get angry pretty quickly? And he that ruleth his spirit, than he that takes a city. Some people are ready to fight at the tip of a hat. You've heard that? Well, he said it's better to be slow at anger, at getting angry. You're much greater and stronger than the mighty. The fellow might be mighty, but he can't control his anger. He's spouting off at the nothing. Don't take anything to set him off. And he'll tell you quickly how he feels about you. You've heard some of that maybe. Good comparison, isn't it? 17:1. Better is a dry morsel and quietness therewith than a house full of sacrifices with strife. A lot of places are just full of strife. You know that? A lot of churches, it's just strife. Brethren not getting along. Families not getting along, fighting and fussing. He said you'd better off just have a dry morsel. What's a morsel? Huh? Yeah, like a piece of, yeah, just the least amount. And quietness. Than a house full of sacrifices. A house full of goodies. With strife. You see, that house full of sacrifices is not worth very much if you've got strife going on. And a lot of people that always fighting and fussing. Sad, isn't it? I don't see how folks get anything done. It affects the children. It affects the attitude of the people involved. Strife. Shouldn't have any of it. He talks about being quiet. A lot of people have trouble being quiet. You know, Paul writing the Thessalonians talked about being quiet. People need a quiet time in their life, don't they? You need some quiet time. If you don't, you can get just so strung out, high strung, that you can't function. Pretty good stuff, isn't it? Chapter 19:1 now. Better is the poor that walketh in his integrity than he that is perverse in his lips and is a fool. Integrity. Who was that fellow we read about earlier in our studies that whose integrity was so good? Who was that? Job. Remember that? We ran into that word integrity when we studied the book of Job. 19:22. The desire of a man is his kindness, and a poor man is better than a what? A liar. You're better off to not have a dime in your pocket than to be a liar. God don't like lying. Can you think of somebody in the New Testament who got themselves into real trouble for lying? Who was that? There's a couple. Right, Ananias and Sapphira in Acts chapter 5. What did they lie about?
Their money.
Their giving. They sold a little piece of ground and they laid the money at the apostles' feet. They pretended to do what?
Give it all.
Give all of it. And they kept back a part of it, but they said we gave it all. They lied about it. And what happened to them? They were executed on the spot. For lying. You read all that in Acts chapter 5, remember? The first 11 verses. 21:9. It's better. All these passages have the word better in them, you notice? It's a comparison. It's better. Better to what? To dwell in the corner of the housetop than with a brawling woman in a white house. That's something? The next one says about the same thing. 21:19. It is better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and an angry woman. What's the matter with an angry woman?
Can't shoot her.
Go
hunting, you're all right. You're out in the wilderness.
All right. literally that statement about dwelling in the wilderness is the idea of in the land of the desert. Desert. Like being out in the desert by yourself. I think a lot of people have a lot of family problems. Hard to get along with each other. They're always at each other's throat. You have that problem? How many does it take to fight?
Two.
Takes two, Alan. Good statement. Takes two to fight. What's the best way to deal with somebody who just wants to always argue and fuss and fight? How do you go about trying to handle those people? Anybody got some good advice?
Stay away from them.
Stay away from them. What else? Yvette, you ought to be good at this. How do you deal with people, you do that all the time, that have these problems that they can't get along with each other? They always are fussing and fighting and knocked down and drag out. What do you, any advice you give a person like that?
Well, I mean, I agree with what
Howard
said. Sorry. About staying away.
Suppose you're married to one of them.
Sometimes you can't.
Okay, go ahead.
But you don't. I mean, one of the things is that you don't. You can't fight resistance with resistance. I mean, it just gets worse.
Y'all get that? Can't fight resistance with resistance? Go ahead. The reason I'm calling on Yvette, this is her work. This is what she does. She works with people with various issues. Yes?
The example I try to remember is that every time Christ got into a conversation with somebody, he'd ask questions.
Ask a question.
And if you ask questions of somebody, they naturally assume you are interested in their situation.
Okay. Good thought.
And you can soften it that way.
Keep your voice down. You get to hollering and fussing at each other and shouting, you're not going to get anywhere. You don't have to do that shouting, do you, Allie?
You don't have to, but sometimes it's really hard not to. You know what they say, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Not in my case or anything.
Well, nobody assumed that.
When you interact with a person, if you don't debate with them and don't get on the defense with them, if you try to be more reasoning with them, it seems to help, I think. Because a lot of people try to be very argumentative. And if you go back at them that same way, then it does become a big shouting match.
Anybody here that's always gotten along with your husband or wife? Pretty most of the time? Who is that? And you did, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
How'd that happen? How'd you do that? What did you do? What's your role in that? So
I thought of him and he thought of me. We put each other first.
Okay, that's a good thought. Do you do that? You know, when Paul wrote the Romans, and he talked about vengeance belongs to the Lord, and somebody that's your enemy, you treat them so well, so good, that it's like heaping what? Coals of fire on the head, he said. Might try that. That's a biblical principle. What's the golden rule in the Bible? Let me see who wants to answer that. Tommy, what's the golden rule in the Bible? I give the first word, do. Yeah, you heard that? Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. That's a paraphrase of Matthew 7:12. Often called the golden rule of life. Treat others like you'd like to be treated. Sometimes people are always arguing, fussing. They're so much alike that they're always butting heads. I think I mentioned this to you once before. They was interviewing an old fella. He's up in his 90s and he's healthy and well. And somebody asked him, what do you attribute his long life to? He said, well, when we first got married, we made a little decision that if we'd get in an argument of some sort, instead of fussing and fighting, I would just get out and take a walk in the woods. And he said, I guess one reason I've lived so long is I have lived a rigorous outdoor life. And so, as somebody said a while ago, maybe get away from it a while, if you can. Anything else you want to say about that one? Okay. Number 22:1. Proverbs 22:1. Remember now, we're using the word better to contrast some things. A good name is rather to be chosen than what? Great riches. And loving favor rather than silver and gold. A good name is hard to come by. Sometimes a business goes up for sale. And that business is pretty expensive. Because one thing they're buying is what, Robin?
The name.
Think Marsh Grocery right here. If you were to buy that, you would probably pay a great sum just for the name Marsh if they'd let you use it. And that happens all the time in business, you know. People sell a business and the merchandise may not be worth a whole lot, but you pay for the name. You think a name's important? What's the name you've seen on television the last several days? What?
The Super Bowl.
What?
Lucas Oil.
Is there anybody in the world that hadn't seen Lucas Oil, you think, by tonight when millions and millions and millions of people watch the Super Bowl? The world will have seen that lots of times. You think they put their name out there just to, they couldn't find something else to put out there? How'd they get that name up there, Robbie?
They paid for it.
Wonder what they paid for.
A couple billion.
Huh?
A couple billion.
Greg?
If I remember the right figures, it was like $30 million over 30 years or something like that. It was a bargain.
It's outstanding what they paid to get two words up there, Lucas Oil. And then these preachers around here say there's nothing in a name. That one name just as good as another. But you think Lucas Oil thinks that? I don't think so. A good name is better to be chosen than great riches. A good name's worth something. And sometimes people ruin a good family name by their deeds. Can you think of a name down in time past that people even pronounce it differently than what it really is? Because how bad the name was? First name, I'll give you the first name, John. Greg, you ought to know this.
Dillinger.
John Dillinger. What's wrong with that name? Who knows who he was? Robbie?
There's nothing wrong with the name.
Who was he? Yeah.
He was a gangster.
Yeah, a gangster. Robert. You know what how they pronounce that today?
Dillinger.
They don't like that connotation of Dillinger. Because of what you think of when you think of that name.
Bankrupt.
Yeah, see? Yeah. And so, isn't this a great statement? A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. What you rather have? A good name or a lot of money?
A good name.
But most people take the money, wouldn't they? But the Bible says a good name is better than that. Isn't these great statements? 25:24. I've already talked to you about that one. It's a repeat of, it's better to run the corner of the house than with a balding woman. 27:5. Open rebuke is better than secret love. Open rebuke. What's open rebuke? What's open rebuke?
Correcting somebody.
Somebody corrects you openly. Back to your face. Rather than secret love. That's not known, not made known. See? 27:10, number 17. Thine own friend and their father's friend forsake not. By the way, some of the best friends you may ever have would be somebody who was a friend with your dad or mom. Forsake not. Neither go into thy brother's house in the day of calamity. For better is a neighbor that is near than a brother far off. What's wrong with a brother far off? Yeah, he's not there for you. He's too far away. That's like people say, well, we're behind you. And you look back and guess what, Robin?
He's way behind
you. Way behind you. Yeah. Way back there. I'm behind you. He didn't say how far, did he? So, it's hard to come. Good friends are hard to come by. The Bible tells you how to have friends. What's the answer to that?
Be a friend.
He that hath friends must show himself friendly. I hear people say, I don't have any friends. Well, whose fault is it? You decide. You got to be friendly. Well, there's one more and we'll finish this class. 28:6. Better is the poor that walketh in his uprightness than he that is perverse in his ways, though he be rich. What statements? You like these? I think they're great. Don't you? Things that are better. When you come back Wednesday night, we'll pick up point 7. Things that God hates. Read that passage, chapter 6, 16 to 19, and list the things that God hates. Then we'll probably finish this Wednesday night when you come back. We'll talk about drinking. Again, about having friends and some good lessons that we haven't touched on in this book. Thanks for being in our class today.